Welcome everyone to the CCWG Accountability Webinar Session 1 on August the 4th. We will be holding this webinar by walking everyone through the set of slides that we have prepared for you, and we would kindly ask you to hold any of your questions till the end. We will be going through all chapters again, but we would like to give you a brief walkthrough of the whole slide set before we open the floor for questions and answers, and of course the discussion. And I would also like to remind you to please identify yourselves when speaking to the audience. This is, of course, not only for transcript purposes, but also to identify anyone that is raising a certain question. I also kindly remind you to mute your mics if you're not speaking. So, with no further delay, we will begin this webinar. And as I said, this webinar is intended to walk all the attendees through our second draft proposal of the Cross-Community Working Group on Enhancing ICANN's Accountability. So we could please pass to the next slide. Some of you may remember, and if you haven't attended or followed the process previously, there are two parallel tracks that have been running since the NTIA, this is the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, announced their intent to transition the stewardship of the IANA functions to the Internet community and convened ICANN to be the one to coordinate these efforts. And since then, the ICG has, the coordination group that is in charge of building a single proposal that will be in turn delivered to the NTIA. And the ICG has finalized its interim first draft, its final draft of the IANA stewardship transition proposal. And it's currently open for public comment. And the CCWG on Enhancing ICANN's Accountability has finalized its second draft proposal for Workstream 1. And this proposal is also currently open for public comment. We will be going into details on the public comment period later in this webinar. But so far, this is where we're standing at the moment. Can we please turn to the next slide? So when this CCWG on Enhancing ICANN's Accountability was created, it was envisioned to have a goal of course, deliver proposals that would enhance ICANN's accountability towards all its stakeholders. And for this, we divided our work into two working streams. The first one being, of course, Workstream 1, which focused on mechanisms that would be needed in order to enhance ICANN's accountability and that must be in place or committed to within the timeframe of the IANA stewardship transition. This is, of course, before the transition takes place. And the other Workstream, Workstream 2, is the one that focuses on addressing accountability topics, for which the timeline for developing certain solutions would be fully implemented on a timeline that would need to be extended beyond the IANA stewardship transition. So with this, we have these two work streams. This proposal, this second draft proposal that's open for public comment at this stage, is focusing, of course, on Workstream 1, but it's also highlighting some of the work that will be done on Workstream 2 by this same group. So today, the ICANN community is and the Board of Directors is organized into three supporting organizations, four advisory committees. And while the ICANN Board has the ultimate authority of approving or rejecting all the policy recommendations that are built by the supporting organizations. The supporting organizations are responsible for developing and making policy recommendations to the board. And the advisory committees are the ones in charge, of course, providing advice with regards to these policies that are being built by the supporting organizations. And these advice is provided to the board of directors by these advisory committees. Can we go to the next slide, please? So in the path of our work, what we did in the CCWG accountability was to identify the different building blocks that we thought that were needed in order to better organize and better empower the community. So what we have today with regards to these four building blocks is, of course, the ICANN community, which is, as I said, organized through the supporting organizations and the advisory committees. We have the ICANN board, which is, of course, the executive power within the ICANN organization. Then we have the principals that are vested into the bylaws. And we have also an independent appeals mechanism, the IRP, which currently needs to be, of course, enhanced. So with these four building blocks, we began working on trying to find the different mechanisms that would help us achieve the goal of enhancing ICANN's accountability. Could we please turn to the next slide? So in designing these new mechanisms and in order to empower the community, we also thought of escalation paths as opposed to the status quo. And here, the CCWG on accountability is recommending that the multi-stakeholder community has more governance power. And these powers will be, of course, discussed in some later slides. But what we're trying to do is to empower the community. And one thing that is very important to emphasize is that even though we are providing the community with more powers, these powers are intended to provide only recourse as part of an escalation pipe in case there is some kind of a substantial disagreement between the ICANN board and the ICANN community, and they don't change or interfere with the way we operate today on a day-to-day basis. So this will not change how things are done on a day-to-day basis, and will only be there in case needed, and if there were any kind of substantial disagreement between the ICANN board and the ICANN community. So these additional powers would not impact, as I said, the status quo of how the community operates or introduce new risks to the community or its members. And with this, I'll turn to Thomas for the next slide.
Thank you very much, Leon, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is Thomas Rickert, and I'm another co-chair of the CCWG. I'd now like to walk you through some of the proposed enhancements to ICANN's accountability architecture. And on this slide, you will see what you already saw on the slide that Leon presented to you. And these are the four building blocks: the empowered community, the ICANN board, the principals, and the independent appeals mechanism. And can we please move the animation forward? So as you know, the ICANN board is developing a budget, a strategic and operating plan, in discussion, in consultation with the ICANN community. And that shall pretty much change, as well as the ICANN board will enter into discussions with the community when it comes to changes to the bylaws. In order to replace the historic relationship with the U.S. government, the backstop that the U.S. government provided, we thought it would be valuable to replace this power that the U.S. government has and empower the community as such. We will speak to the details of the community powers later in this presentation, but this gives you an overview of what can actually be done. So if need be, the empowered community will be in a position to review and, as the case may be, reject a budget or a strategy, a strategic or operating plan that has been agreed upon and voted on by the ICANN board. So that is a power that allows for the community to weigh in case the board fails to take on board the messages it receives from the community during the deliberation and consultation process that's taking place anyway. Next animation, please. The ICANN community will also have the power to either ask for individual directors to be removed or to recall the entire board. Now, it's important to note that this community power is not based on suspicions against the current board, but our group has been tasked with looking at worst-case scenarios, looking at contingencies. And one of the contingencies that ICANN needs to be safeguarded against would be a rogue board. And therefore, the community felt that a community power would be needed to dismiss the board if the board is acting in violation of ICANN's bylaws. Can we move the animation forward, please? In return, the community during our first public comment period felt that we also need to make sure that we don't only add... Can you please mute the speakers of your computers and mute your microphones? Thank you. The ICANN community has also asked us to make sure that we do not only impose new or strengthened accountability mechanisms on the board, but what about the community? The community itself also needs to be accountable. That's the concept of what we call watch the watchers, and therefore there are structural reviews that take place periodically in order to ensure that there is sufficient accountability inside the community. Can we move the animation forward, please? So what's new, and we will get to that in a moment, is that we have introduced the concept of fundamental bylaws. So our set of recommendations entails that we have existing parts of the bylaws, and actually huge chunks of the bylaws remain untouched. We would have new ideas that are incorporated into the bylaws, and we will incorporate parts of the affirmation of commitments, particularly the reviews, into the bylaws. And then we will add more robust fundamental bylaws. And they are called fundamental because they are so important for ICANN as an organization. And these are bylaws that are harder to change. So basically, the principles that go into the bylaws form part of the constitutional document of the organization. Can we move the animation forward, please? Also, we looked at enhancement to the independent review process. So that, as you will remember from Leon's intervention, that is the judiciary, if you take the analogy of a state. And so the IRP process is also enhanced, but we will talk about that separately. Can we move to the next slide, please? So I hope everybody is well there. Can you please mute your microphones? So we will now walk through the components that I introduced to do on the previous slide. Now, at the upper left-hand side of the slide, you will remember there were the principles, the ICANN bylaws, and what we did is we reviewed the mission statement, and we also took a look at the core values, and we split those into different two subsections on commitments and core values. And that is basically to provide a foundation, a robust foundation, to ensure that there is no mission creep inside ICANN, that ICANN's mission shall be focused on the secure, stable, and resilient management of the DNS, that ICANN is working bottom-up using the multi-stakeholder model, that it is private. We explain exactly what this privatization, if you wish, means, that we have different components of the stakeholder model. We explain that ICANN shall abide by the policies that are developed by the community, and we can easily get back to that during the discussion and Q&A phase of this call. But this is just to let you know that the fundamental ideas of how ICANN shall work are in situation of the reviews stemming from the AOC. And then, as we will talk about the judiciary, the independent review process, that will check whether ICANN's action have been in compliance with ICANN's constitution, if you wish, with the bylaws, and infringements of those can then be determined by looking at exactly this, the mission, core values, and the mission commitment and core values. So this is just a very brief overview of what we did structurally to the principles. Can we move to the next slide? So we can go through this relatively quickly because I already explained to you that we will leave big parts of the bylaws untouched. We will have new ideas. We will have the AOC reviews in there. But then we have these fundamental bylaws. Fundamental bylaws, as I mentioned, are harder to change. So while standard bylaws or ordinary bylaws can be changed by the board with a two-thirds majority, we're now looking at a set of bylaws where a higher threshold is needed in order to provide for change. As you will recall and as you will truly share, there's the view held in the community and in big parts of the community that ICANN should stick to its mission and that it should not embark on journeys that are outside the mission. So we want to make sure that the mission commitments and core values are limited. At the same time, we are all cognizant that ICANN is working in a rapidly changing environment that may require ICANN to change its mission. And therefore, we said there must be a certain flexibility, but at the same time, in order for the organization to change its remit, a high threshold of support within the community is required. And in order to make sure that these ideas are not undermined, the mission, commitments, and core values themselves are made fundamental bylaws. The IRP is going to be fundamental because we don't want any board to change the bylaws and remove the judiciary part of the organization. Then the way it works when it comes to changing the bylaws, the community mechanism as a sole member, we will speak to that in a moment, but the legal vehicle for exercising the community powers will be the sole membership model where all the constituent parts of ICANN's community make one single member of ICANN. Then reconsideration, rejection of budget strategic plan, you know, the community powers that I explained to you will be enshrined in the fundamental bylaws as well as the certain reviews that the CWG came up with and also the post-transition IANA governance and customer standing committee structures. Will be fundamental bylaws in order to ensure that these cannot easily be abandoned, but that they are rather perpetuated for ICANN's future. Can we move to the next slide, please? The IRP, the independent review process, has been criticized by many for just providing a tool to have check whether ICANN has played by the rules, whether procedural aspects have been abided by. So there is the possibility of decisions being materially wrong but since process has been followed, there's nothing that can be done. So we wanted that to change. We wanted to make sure that the IRP can be used to also have the merits of the individual case assessed. We wanted to be truly independent, and therefore we wanted to make sure that we have good independent experts standing by. So there is a standing panel, a pool of experts of at least seven individuals, and these will be then the pool from which three panelists are chosen, one from each party, and the third panelist will be chosen by the panelists that have been picked by the two parties. So the details of this process will further be fleshed out, but I think what's important to note is that this IRP, and I alluded to that earlier, is meant to be a tool to determine whether ICANN has acted in violation of its bylaws. But there are more facets to it, one of which being to reconcile conflicting decisions by expert panels. Some of you will remember that we had such cases in the course of the new GTLD program, and also the IRP will be in, or can be invoked when rights of the sole member, of the community member, if you wish, are concerned. Let's move to the next slide, please. We also looked at the reconsideration request process and considered and now recommend enhancements to those, to that process. And these are briefly mentioned in the boxes that you see here. So let's walk through them briefly. That would be expanding the scope of permissible requests. So basically, it's board or staff action or inaction that, again, is in violation or in contradiction to ICANN's mission commitments and core values. We recommend to extend the time for filing from 50 to 30 days. We make it harder for a request being dismissed. Also, we will require ICANN directors to make these determinations on all requests after receiving the recommendation from the BGC. And for the initial evaluation of the case, we recommend that ICANN is not using its legal team or its own legal counsel to have an initial assessment of the case, but we want to strengthen the ombudsman's role due to the independence and the expertise that he has, and that shall be that shall advance the quality of the decision making. There shall be the opportunity for the requester to rebut in order to make sure that his or her views are heard before the decision is being made, and ultimately we're going to suggest various enhancements to transparency requirements. So there shall be a decision, for example, in no longer than 120 days from the date of filing, and ideally it should happen within 60 days. So I think with that we can move to the next slide. And I heard that Leon's call has dropped. Leon, are you back online? Okay, so I would suggest that in order to make best use of our time, I will continue showing you through the next slide, and I would hope that we get a signal, or I will get a signal once Leon is back so that he can take over, because we wanted to take turns presenting to you in order to make it more interesting for you to hear different voices every now and then. We now come to the community mechanism. As a sole member, can we move back to the previous slide, please? those that have read the first report we published for public comment will remember that we had a different reference model at the time. We were suggesting a reference model whereby the SOs and ACs use legal entities, and we recommended that these could be unincorporated associations under Californian law, lightweight structures that can easily be set up that would be used by the SOs and ACs to exercise their voting powers and enter into a legal relationship with ICANN, which is required for the community powers to be enforceable should there be a need for that. And there was some criticism because commenters said, well, if you have all the SOs and ACs being members of the organization, what if one of them chooses to file a derivative lawsuit? What about statutory rights that they have in California? Will there be will the organization be weakened, or will it be disrupted if we give these powers to SOs and ACs? So that can that actually have unintended side effects? And that was the reason why we looked at various models, and I'm just highlighting the issues with the first reference model. And what we then did was come up with the idea of a sole member model, where the community acts as a sole member without needing to change anything. So basically the SOs and ACs would, as they do today, make policies, they advise, they consult with the board, and the board then takes action. And only in the instance where the board takes action that is not reflecting the community's wishes, then the community powers that are or will be enshrined in the bylaws can be invoked, and then each of the SOs and ACs that wish to vote can exercise voting powers through this mechanism as a sole member, and then there could be recourse. And since this is all put into the bylaws, there is no change required to the SOs and ACs, so they don't have to transform themselves into anything else. So we just have this construction, the sole member, which can be used as a place where votes are cast in order to influence board decisions. And I think I should leave it there. We will get to that. I'm sure that you will have questions, but that is the most lightweight explanation that I can give you at the moment. Can we move to the next slide?
I am back, Thomas, if you want to.
Okay, happy for you to take over.
Thank you very much, Thomas. This is Leon Sanchez again. I'm sorry for the hiccup. Well, as Thomas was explaining, and as I told you earlier in some of the slides that I was presenting, we want an empowered community. We're designing mechanisms to have an empowered community. And what are these powers? These powers are five powers that will enable, of course, the community to not only hold the board accountable, but also to achieve different goals by exercising these powers. So the first power would be to reconsider and, in any case, reject the budget or strategic and operating plans. And this power would be given to the community, so they have the ability to consider the strategic and operating plans and budgets after they are approved by the board, but before they come into effect, and reject them. So we already have budget comment while in the regular process of approving the comment, but what this would do is that it would give the ability to the community to, in an ultimate stance, to reject and block, of course, the budget or strategic plan. The second power would be to reconsider and reject changes to the ICANN standard bylaws. as Thomas was highlighting, there would be the need for the community to what you call to standard bylaws, which let's remember that these are different than fundamental bylaws. The community would be empowered to reject any bylaws proposed by the board of directors if the community thought that those bylaw changes would be contrary to the needs or ICANN's mission, for example. So this would be a new power that's given to the community, and they could reject these standard bylaws changes. The third power would be the power to approve changes to fundamental bylaws. So this is different from the second power, because the second power centers in reconsidering or rejecting standard bylaws changes, but this one requires the community to actually approve changes to those bylaws that are, I think that I'm not being listened very well. I see some comments on the chat that my audio quality is not the best, so I hope this is better. And so as I was saying, approving fundamental bylaws would be the third power for the community, and this would require that any change to bylaws that are categorized as fundamental would need to have approval from the community before they go into effect, and this higher vote threshold than the regular voting for standard bylaws changes. The fourth power would be to remove individual board members. And these, by this power, the community or the organization that appointed that gives them the director could end this board member term and trigger a replacement process. This general approach is consistent with the law, and is that the appointing body is the removing body. We have had very thorough discussions. We have very, very thorough discussions on how to implement actually this individual board member removal, and you will be able to see the details in our second draft proposal. So I definitely encourage you to take a look at the whole document. The fifth power would be the recalling, the ability to recall the entire ICANN board, and this power would allow the community to remove the entire board of directors, and this is of course expected to be used only in exceptional circumstances. Actually, we don't expect this power to be exercised, but we do have in mind that this would be a very useful tool if it and when needed. So these are the five powers that this proposal provides the community with, so they could be exercised through the community mechanism as sole member, as Thomas previously explained. And now we're going to see a couple of examples of how we would be exercising this power. So if we could please move to the next slide. So exercising the powers, how would these powers would be exercised by the community? And of course, we are talking here at a high level and at a general level. There might be some details that are not in this slide, but they are surely covered in the larger document. And let's say this is a general flowchart of how the committee would exercise its powers. And first, the cost, of course, would be that the ICANN board or a board member action causing significant concern to members of the community would trigger a petition. And this petition would be raised by at least one SO or one AC, depending on the power that the community is trying to exercise. And this would start a formal discussion and decision-making about whether the community would exercise an actual power or not. And generally, there would be a time frame of 15 days to begin this process of petitioning and triggering the whole mechanism. And then the step two would be discussing, of course, whether the rest of the SOs and ACs are okay and are on the same page with regards to exercising the power that is being asked to be exercised on the petition. And for this, there would be also a period of 15 days, starting after the day that a valid petition has been received. And the third step would be to actually take a decision. And for these DSOs and ACs that have voting rights in this community mechanism as sole member, would cast their votes and decide whether to exercise the power or not. This decision period would also last for 15 days, and this period would start after the conclusion of the discussion period. When this comes to an end, we would, of course, have as an outcome that the IGAN board would need to act in accordance to the community's decision. So with this, the community would be able to exercise the five powers that we have tried to vest into them through the community model, the community mechanism as single or sole member model, and this would be the general flowchart of how to achieve a decision based on a petition and, of course, a cost for this. Can we switch to the next slide? So now let's see an example on reconsidering or rejecting changes to ICANN's standard bylaws. So the cost here would be that the board wants to amend the standard bylaws in some way that the community does not approve. Currently, we have a period in which we can comment on bylaws changes, and what this would do is to actually enhance this process. That's why we are talking about enhancing ICANN's accountability. This would provide, of course, a way for the community to act in case the bylaws changes are against the needs or the greatest concerns within the community. So this petition would trigger the process of the use of this community power, which is rejecting or reconsidering the standard bylaws. For this, we would need to have a single majority. This means an opposed to exceed the 50% of that SO's or AC's governing body. And as I said in the previous slide, the petition would need one SO or AC to begin its existence. So the next step would be the discussion by the whole community, and this would happen between all SOs and ACs through the community mechanism as sole member model. And here they would discuss the proposed use of the power, and for this there would be a mixture of formal and informal discussions, advice, consideration, and within the forum and informally within DSOs and ACs. And of course, DSOs and ACs would be able to carry these discussions on according to their own procedures, and we, of course, expect that there would be a wider discussion between SOs and ACs across. So this could lead to the first leg, which would be the decision. And here the SOs and ACs would cast their votes to decide whether the power would be used or not. And in this case, the chair of each SO and AC would be responsible for communicating the votes of the SO and AC to the ICANN board. To succeed in this particular case, which is reconsidering or rejecting the change to the standard bylaws, there we are considering to require a two-thirds support level within the community mechanism. And this would, of course, have as an outcome that the board would need to absorb the feedback from the community, make proper adjustments to the bylaw change, and propose a new set of amendments to the bylaws as per the judicial process. And here, it is important to highlight that this that this process wouldn't allow the community to actually redraft the bylaw, but it would only allow to reject the bylaw change and provide feedback to the board so that the board could actually redraft the bylaw itself and then come back to the community with a new proposal. Can we go to the next slide, please? So in this example, we see the power of recalling the entire board. And here, of course, the cause is a set of problems that have become so entrenched that the community wishes to signal its lack of confidence in the board. So we're talking about a whole or entire board removal. So the petition would initiate as usual with this is a different case. In this case, since we are talking about the whole ICANN board removal, this would need a special trigger, which is that at least two of the SOs or ACs, of which one must be an SO, would raise a petition. And these would be indicated as well as by having a simple majority within each SO and ACs, according to the rules of procedure and governing bodies. And then this would trigger the discussion within the whole community to find out whether this power should be exercised or not. And this would be carried out in the same way as we discussed in the previous slide, by a mixture of formal and informal discussions, advice and consideration within the forum and within each of the SOs and ACs according to their procedures. And this would take us to a decision in which the SOs and ACs would cast their votes in the regular regular procedure as highlighted in the previous slide, and the chairs of each SO and ACs would be responsible again for communicating votes to the ICANN board. In this case, the voting threshold for the decision or the power to be exercised is being proposed to be 75% of all the votes available within the community mechanism as sole member, and will have to be kept in favor, of course, of recalling the board for this to be effective. And the outcome would be that the board would be recalled, and there would be the need for an interim board to replace the actual ICANN board, except for the president, which is the CEO of ICANN. So can we please move to the next slide? And I will turn back to Thomas for this next slide.
Thank you very much, Leon. And this slide deals with who has what influence in the community mechanism. You have learned about the single membership model, but the question then is, how are decisions made? And what group has what weight when it comes to voting? As you see on the right-hand side of the slide, our recommendation is to allocate 5 votes to ASO, GNSO, CCNSO, GAC, and the ALEC, while ESSEC and RSEC would both be equipped with 2 votes. The difference in votes is recommended because of the special nature of what ASEC and RSEC do in terms of remit, but also since they are board-appointed advisory committees. The number 5 has been discussed quite extensively, and 5 got most traction because it would allow for the groups to have 1 vote per geographic region, for example, and that might make it easier for some organizations to come to terms with how to exercise votes. But having said that, it's important to note that we hope that these votes will never be cast, that the community will be able to continue weighing in via consensus decision-making and not by means of voting. But if it has to be done, then we would recommend the allocation as you find in that table. And it's also important to know that for the initial phase at least, it is highly likely that ESSEC and RSEC will not vote, and the GAC has not yet made a decision whether it wishes to participate in that scheme. It's also important to note that we will not have a body or a group where five or two individuals from each of those organizations will sit together and cast their votes. This is taking place, or the decision-making is taking place in the respective SOs and ACs according to their own decision-making rules. So they can have split votes. They don't have to. So that is all left to their discretion. But the important notion is that there are no individuals in there that sit in a council or whatever type of group you might think of together. But the decision making is done within the respective group after the consultation process in what we call the community forum, where the community meets prior to decision making. And then after the community has discussed, after the SOs and ACs have discussed internally and have made up their minds how to vote, then the votes or the results of the voting would be communicated by the chair of each SO and AC to the ICANN board. So I guess we should leave it there. I'm sure we will get back to that point later during the discussion. Can we move to the next slide, please? Stress tests. We're not going to discuss this in length, but we are certainly more than happy to respond to your questions. It was one of our tasks to make sure that the changes to ICANN's accountability that we recommend do not create additional contingencies, but also we have to make sure that existing contingencies that we could imagine and that we took from community input that was in particular presented to ICANN during a public comment period that was held after the announcement of the U.S. government. So we looked at what contingencies we must safeguard ICANN against, and that was financial crisis or insolvency. Let's say the income from domain registrations goes down. How can we ensure that this does not negatively impact, let's say, the IN operations or ICANN itself? Failure to meet operational obligations, legal and legislative action. Let's say legal action is taken against ICANN to delegate a certain top-level domain name. Then we would have failure of accountability. That would be a rogue board, for example, or failure of accountability to external stakeholders. So we have fleshed out numerous scenarios. We have looked at what ICANN's current answer to these stress test scenarios would be. We would then make a determination whether this existing accountability response is sufficient to counter the contingency. And where that was not the case, we would test whether the recommendation that our group comes up with adequately addresses the concern or the contingency. And what I can say, and I invite all of you to take a look at the individual stress test, what we can say is that we are confident, we are convinced that all the contingencies we have identified are adequately dealt with, particularly with respect to those that were required by the U.S. government as a condition for the transition. But we do have Cheryl Langdonor and Steve Delbianco, who led on that effort with us on the call, as we do have Becky Burr and Jordan Carter. And when we come to the Q&A, you can tap on their wealth of expertise, and they will gladly answer all the questions you might have. Next slide, please. I'm going to keep this very brief because you will have heard all of this already. We make a distinction between Workstream 1 and Workstream 2. Leon has spoken about that at the outset of this webinar. Then what we're doing now is we will hopefully finalize our Workstream 1 recommendations, have them adopted by the chartering organization at the upcoming ICANN meeting in Dublin. We will then move to the Workstream 1 implementation, and in parallel, we will work on the items that we listed as tasks for Workstream number 2. And then at the end of July next year, we will start on Workstream 2 implementation. So if you look at the box at the right upper side of this slide, there are the items that we want to work on in Workstream 2. That is dealt with later because it qualifies for Workstream 2, but it is not being put on the back burner. As you can see, we have a clear plan to work on all these important issues, such as remaining questions on jurisdiction, accountability of the SOs and ACs, working on the culture of transparency, diversity, human rights, and further fleshing out operational details of our Workstream 1 requirements. So let's move to the next slide, please. And that is the linkage between the CWG stewardship and our cross-community working group. You will remember that the CWG has made its proposal. It has been adopted by the chartering organization. But the CWG made very clear that in its proposal, it is relying on our group to deliver on certain requirements so that there is a cohesive accountability framework, including the needs of the CWG. And those are relating to the ICANN budget. So it must be ensured that the community can get its will when it comes to the ICANN budget and the IANA budget in particular. There needs to be the possibility to get recourse when it comes to board action. The CWG has requested for us to include certain aspects in the bylaws, such as the IANA functions review, the CSC, the Customer Standing Committee, as well as the separation process. Then they've asked us to make certain things fundamental so that they can't easily be changed. And they also made the IRP an integral part of their own thinking. And as you can see on this slide, we have ticked all the boxes, i.e., we are sure that we have met all the CWG requirements, that we do know that the CWG itself has put together a team that is looking at our recommendations because we can speak on their behalf. And despite all communication and coordination that's taking place between the two groups, particularly between the leadership of the two groups, we want to make sure that the CWG itself determines that we met all their conditions. So I think that's the last slide of our slide deck. I would like to ask staff to move us back to slide number 6, which is the overview of the accountability architecture. And we suggest that we now take your questions. Slide number 6 will help you refresh your memory on what we can discuss. We would suggest that we first discuss the principles, the mission, core values, and commitments. After that, we're going to talk about the idea of fundamental bylaws. Then comes the IRP, reconsideration request, the CMSM, the sole membership model. Then we're going to discuss the community powers and the influence that the different SOs and MACs have. So with that, I would like to open the floor for questions. So do we have questions on the principles? There don't seem to be any at the moment, but we can go back to that point, no problem. Do we have questions on the concept of fundamental bylaws? Are there questions with respect to the enhanced proposed enhancements to the independent review process? So there is a question from Steve Crocker on the AOC reviews, which, as you will remember, are going to be incorporated into the bylaws. And so I think it's a good point in time in our discussion to hear that question. Steve,
thank
I'm not
you.
Sure whether you're on audio, but if you are, please fire away.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me? I assume you can. Yeah. Yep, good.
We can hear you all right.
Good. Yep. So the idea of incorporating the AOC reviews into the bylaws is a good one. I fully support it. We've had the point I'm going to make has been raised before, but not adequately dealt with. The SSR and the ATRT, the Accountability, Transparency, and the Security, Stability, Resiliency reviews, are solid reviews that should be repeated, should be included in the bylaws. The Who Is review has a very deep and fundamental flaw that absolutely must not be included as is. The idea of continuing to look at who is perfectly fine, but there has been an enormous amount of work, an enormous amount of money and time and energy spent trying to fix the and lead a path away from the presumptions that are built into the existing language in the AOC document. And perpetuating those words without addressing that would be an extreme mistake. And for consistency, if those are put in, then it would mean rolling back the work that the expert working group has done, killing off the work that the GNSO is doing in policy development in this area, and in general, turning away from any attempt to improve the WHOIS system. There's probably another discussion to have about the competition choice issue on the fourth review, but I'm particularly concerned that it would be a perpetuating a mistake that was first made in 2009 when the language was drafted and the opportunity to fix it was pushed back, and I'm strongly opposed to including those words. It is a tiny, tiny, tiny small point, but it is pretty fundamental to a serious piece of work that's been underway for at least 3 years.
Thanks very much, Steve. And in order to answer that question, I would like to hand over to Steve Belbianco, who's been the pen holder for that section of our report.
Hey, thank you, Steve. Appreciate that point. And I know you've brought it up a few times before, and the CCWG took two reactions to it. The first is we are not perpetuating anything in the reviews. In fact, page 77 of the proposal suggests that the ATRT, that's the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, will have the power to assess and make recommendations for terminating or amending any of the other periodic reviews, including the Who Is and Directory Services review, and recommends additional periodic reviews. So the idea there is to enable one of the review teams, the ATRT, to terminate or amend other reviews in just the way that you're suggesting. And yet that would be done as part of the ATRT's review and public comment process. The second is that in bringing over the affirmation of commitment, we were very conscious to bring over the AOC as close as possible to the commitments that ICANN has made in the AOC. Since those commitments wanted to be preserved, at least until the community could review and amend them through the mechanism I just discussed. And finally, I'll note that in response to concerns like yours, we made sure not to incorporate the commitments that are at the front end of each of these reviews as part of the ICANN fundamental bylaw. Instead, they're just part of the text surrounding the actual review. So the threshold for that change is, of course, much easier and lower. So I really think that was a way for us to both honor our commitment to bring over the AOC and to still be flexible enough to change it over time. Thank you.
Thank thank you, Steve. I understand and appreciate the perspective you're coming from. That is, from my perspective, completely unacceptable. It is a passing of the ball. I understand you're operating under pressure, and I understand that you didn't really want to think hard about it. But nonetheless, it is a destructive and inappropriate thing to do.
Wow.
Thanks very much, Steve. We will take good note of your comment, as we will take good note of all the other comments that will surely be made during this conference call. I'm just checking. We had some questions in the chat, some of which have been answered in the chat already. Since I spoke, I haven't fully followed which of the questions remain to be open. I would suggest that we first check whether there are questions with respect to the reconsideration process. I saw a question from Steve Metallis and one from Kurt Fritz, which better fit to later sections of our discussion. So are there any questions from the group on the enhancements to the reconsideration process? So there don't seem to be any, which is why we can then move to the community model, the sole membership model. And I think that Steve's question, Steve was on the CWG requirements, so we take that later. Let's then go to Kurt Fritz's question, which I'm going to read out for you. I have a question on the CMSM. The CMSM has, for example, 5 RIR members, i.e. one for each of the RIRs, and 5 GNSO members, i.e. one for the 1,000-plus GTOD registries. This is an apparent disparity, but I'm interested in the discussion that led to this model so I can better understand it. There is a similar disparity that there are only 5 CCTOD members. Since this was a part of the deliberations of the group that Jordan Carter has led, I would like to invite Jordan to respond to that question. Jordan has no audio, so I would suggest we shelve that question for a second while Jordan provides an answer. I think it's appropriate for him to step in. Are there more questions on the single membership model and the voting weights? So John Mabbitt, can I ask the above? Let me... try to find John's question. John, can you please?
Yeah.
John, Evan, can you please copy your? Shouldn't the voting be weighted depending on the issue? For example, if it is a GTLD issue, should the GNSO vote be weighted above that of the CCNSO and ASO, and vice versa? I would suggest that. Jordan, who is now with us on the audio, response to the two questions that we have in front of us. John?
Thank you, Thomas. It's Jordan Carter here from .NZ. I'm the rapporteur for Work Party 1, which dealt with the community empowerment. In terms of the votes for each of the SOs and ACs, I think the primary motivation for the three SOing the same voting weight was that each of them is a core customer group of ICANN, particularly of the IANA functions, and so as such, they all have a set of functions delivered by the organization that are essential to their business, and as such, there was a sort of proposal to have equal representation between them, and that was extended in the model that the majority of the CCWG wanted to the GAC and the ALAC as well. So all five connected to broad communities outside ICANN, and so it was felt that giving them the same representation was reasonable. And I think the other question was the one about different weights depending on different issues. I think we're anticipating that for most of the work that I do, things will happen as they are today. Certainly the main policy-making business of the ICANN system will be happening through the SO PDPs as it is today. And these accountability powers are designed mainly to be used for holding the organization as a whole to account, or in the specific case of removing a particular director, the appointing SO and AC Act. So that's why there hasn't been thought trying to second guess when an issue might relate more or less to a particular SO or AC in adjusting voting weights. To be honest with you, that wasn't a proposal that came up in the deliberations of the CCWG with any great support behind it.
Thanks, Jordan.
Take a picture.
There is continued discussion on that question in the chat, and not sure whether the request to take a picture of it was directed at me, but I certainly don't have a camera at hand. I would like to add that when it comes to the point that John made to give different voting weights depending on the subject matter, the community powers that we are proposing are last resort powers, and things such as the budget or a rogue board that needs to be dismissed because it acts in violation of the bylaws and it doesn't listen to the community's wishes, I think that is something that affects all parties equally, and therefore, you know, that would not be a GNSO or a CCNSO related issue. When it comes to individual groups or even individual community members or groups being affected, there is the possibility of using the IRP for aggrieved parties. So that is maybe then the tool to be used. So please do see the community powers only as last resort mechanisms, where the weight might not be that relevant. There is another question in the chat from Christina Rosette. Apologies if this was stated at the beginning, which I missed, but will the CCWG answer the question, put it to the chat, distribute responses to webinar attendees? I actually think this is a good idea, and we could do so briefly. I think compiling a Q&A is something very valuable, and we will continue to work on that. Actually, staff is working on that aggregation as we speak. So, Christina, you can rest assured that this will be put at the fingertips of the community. There is a comment from Steve that not all of the community powers are last resort powers, i.e. the review of a bylaw amendment that affects only one SO. Steve, let me try an answer to that. We have two community powers dealing with bylaw changes. one of which would be related to standard bylaws, the other to fundamental bylaws, both of which have in common that there shall be an extensive consultation between the community and the ICOM board. So ideally, the board will only take decisions on standard bylaw changes after having consulted with the community in a fashion that ensures that the community's wishes are adequately reflected in the bylaw change. And so I'm not sure, or I would still see this as a matter of last resort, because the community power only needs to be invoked in a case where the ICANN board does not honor the wishes of the community. Let me check with the list of questions. Okay, so we've now discussed the single membership model. Are there more questions from this group with respect to the single membership model? Then let's maybe move through the community powers. So if we could move to slide number 12, please. So on this slide, you can see the various community powers, the process of how the community powers can be exercised has been described to you, but I think this slide might serve as a nice overview for you to consider whether you have questions on the various individual powers there. I will pause for a moment to give you the opportunity to go through budget, strategic operating plan, changes to ICANN bylaws, changes to fundamental bylaws, removal of individual directors, and recalling the ICANN board entirely. Are there any questions with respect to these powers? So there don't seem to be any questions with respect to these powers. Obviously, Leon has done a sterling job in presenting them to you. So there's a question from John. Thomas, the community can reject a bylaw proposal, but what if the board rejects a proposal? And since this is one of the community power-related questions, I would suggest we go to Jordan again to answer that.
Hi, Thomas, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you all right.
Okay, great, thanks. John, in response to your question, the standard bylaws power only triggers when the board proposes a bylaws change. So the process today is that the board's staff or board or whoever in the community a bylaws change emerges. There's a 40-day public comment period on it. The board looks at the public comments that have come in and then approves the change or modifies it, consults again, whatever. It's only after the approval happens that the community power window is triggered. So if the board never does approve the bylaws change, then there is no bylaws change for the community to consider. In other words, we're not creating a power for the community to initiate bylaws changes on its own. With the fundamental bylaws changes, again, it's expected that the proposed changes will emerge in the usual way. In that situation, both the board and the community do need to approve the change. But in that case, if either party declines to do so, then the bylaws change doesn't go ahead.
So, John, I hope that answers the question. We have another question from Steve Metellis. Does CMS and process apply only to the five powers that were enumerated on slide 12? Jordan?
Thanks. On slide 12, which is in front of us, does the process only apply to those five? The process that we talked through in respect of the standard bylaws and stuff does only apply to these five powers. The community mechanism as sole member will have some of the powers that are set out in the California legislation for a member of a corporation. And those are detailed in one of the legal memos that forms an appendix to this report. But to exercise any of them requires a very high threshold. The logic behind using the community mechanism as sole member is that if all of the powers that are listed on this slide and be enforced, so they're solidly founded. But we're not proposing that the community mechanism would be used to interfere in PDP processes or any of the other usual ICANN decision-making processes. So this mechanism doesn't sort of introduce itself into all of the other work that ICANN does. It's just aimed at these powers.
Thanks very much, John. I think all questions in the chat have been answered, or even there has been the attempt to start an answer, but there's continued discussion between members of or participants of this call, which is a good thing. So there is no queue with more questions. Let me then ask you whether you do not agree that our proposals do enhance ICANN's accountability. So if you think that we have done a poor job in enhancing ICANN's accountability, please let us know. Or if you think we have missed something, if the set of recommendations that we came up with to safeguard ICANN against certain contingencies is not complete, please let us know. Steve thankfully reminds that the question on the CWG requirements has not yet been answered. So let me read it out for you again. What is the basis for CCWG conclusion? It has met all CWG stewardship requirements when it has not made CCTLD redelegation decisions subject to review. That was a part that Steve Bianco has been working on. So, Steve, I'd like to turn over to you to respond to that.
Thank you, Thomas. Stress test 21 was specifically designed to ask whether community or aggrieved parties could pursue relief through an IRP on the revocation or reassignment of a CCTLD manager. That was discussed extensively at the beginning of the work of the CCWG, and we realized that it affected both the IANA side and the greater ICANN community. However, we were asked by the CCNSO to respect their ability to generate policy pursuant to the framework of interpretation, which they and I believe even the GAC and board have recently endorsed, and that was a process that we shouldn't interfere with in the process of coming up with particular rules here. So it's entirely likely that the CCNSO will provide for policy on how to review, how to challenge, how to handle disputes over revocations and redelegation requests for CCTLD managers. That's why it was taken off of our table at the request of the parties involved. I hope that helps.
Steve, I'm sure you will follow up in the chat with more questions if you think that question has not sufficiently answered your question, that answer has not answered your question. Do we have more questions? Some SMEs are typing, so let me pause for a moment. So I think John Nevitt's comment is more comment than a question. Then we have a question from Stephen Derhaag. Would the co-chairs wish to comment on the numerous objections which have been raised on the CCWG mailing list regarding process, lack of adherence to the working group's charter, the rapid turnaround of documents for discussion, the general rapidity of discussion and decision of decision-making process, etc. Stephen, I'm more than happy to do so. In fact, our group has been working for many months now. We have started our work at the end of last year. We have held weekly telephone conferences, and we had multiple face-to-face meetings where the whole group met for multiple days in total. And what you find in this report is the work result of an iterative process. So it's not like the community or the working group has been confronted with hundreds of pages of new material, but we have used our first report. We've analyzed the responses we got during the public comment period. We've then updated our report in the areas where concerns were raised. And sometimes on sections as big as 10, 20 pages, there were only few lines amended. And we have, the rapporteurs that have held the panel on the individual chapters, have walked the whole group through all the changes that were made. In fact, if you look at the overall size of the group, the number of objections we received was very low. And if you look at who has objected against what, there are certain patterns of individuals that obviously disliked the whole process, that continuously objected against what we did. So we do take the concerns very seriously. We think that this is a challenging project that is quite demanding for everyone, but we did this over many, many months. And also it's quite normal for bigger projects that when it comes to finalizing documents that there is some criticism for being too speedy. What I can say also is that a lot of the areas in our report already got broad support, not only inside our group, but also from the community. So what you find in here, in big parts, already built on consensus that previously existed in this group. We have some final questions where the group still continues to discuss, we think that the way the discussions are reflected in the report give a valuable opportunity for the community to chime in and actually help the group navigate and find consensus on the remaining questions. When it comes to allegations of infringements of the charter, there have been some of those allegations over the months, when you allude to an allegation that has been made with respect of us not adequately determining between members from the chartering organizations and participants that are not representing their chartering organizations. Let me just clarify that at the outset of our work, we made clear as co-chairs, that we wanted this process to be as inclusive as can be, because some participants felt that, you know, maybe they are second-class participants in this group, that members have the final say anyway, and we want this to be truly consensus-based, and therefore we said, if we can, if there is sufficient consensus in the group, we're not going to have the members vote on the outcome, and that would be the only instance where we have to make a distinction between the members and participants. So we wanted to treat, and we still do want to treat, members and participants who have done an equally valuable and good job in supporting our common goal of enhancing ICANN's accountability the same way, so that we don't discriminate anyone. So I hope that this helps answering your question. Please do let us know if there are questions unanswered. We think it's important to get everybody's buy-in, and we much appreciate all the feedback that we receive, may it be positive or negative. So I'm not sure whether there are more questions. I think there aren't. And with that, I would like to hand over to Leon for some concluding remarks.
Thank you very much, Thomas. This is Leon Sanchez again. And I see Sebastian Bachelet's hand is up. So, Sebastian, would you like to do some comments? Sebastian, you might be on mute, or is that an old hand? You might be experiencing some technical difficulties, Sebastian. All right, since we are not able to listen to you, Sebastian, I would advise to, of course, make your voice heard offline, maybe through the list. And, well, first of all, I would like to thank all of the people that have worked in building this document. There have been numerous and endless meetings trying to put this together. There have been many very energetic people working on this. And I would like to, of course, acknowledge and recognize the hard work of all those volunteers and, of course, the work of supporting staff that has come along with us on this path. I would also encourage all of you to first spread the word on this public comment period. Let's remember that it was opened yesterday and will be closed on September the 12th. So we have 40 days for you to comment on this second draft proposal. And we would, of course, welcome as many comments as possible. And I see that Sebastian Bachelet is on the French channel, but we are not able.
Leon, this is Thomas speaking. Can I suggest, since we are facing some technical difficulties, that Sebastian sends his question in writing, and we will publicly
Absolutely.
Speak to it in the upcoming webinar on Friday?
Absolutely, yes. We will definitely do that. And as I suggested earlier, Sebastian, please do make your voice heard in writing, offline. And just to finalize this last part of our webinar, as I said, I do encourage everyone to jump in during the public comment period, and we encourage all kinds of comments. We would like to hear what you like from the proposal, what you don't like from the proposal, And for those comments that you're telling us that you don't like something in the proposal, we would really much appreciate that you suggest a constructive alternative that we can build into the proposal to try to address the many concerns that you may have. So with this, I would like to thank everyone that has attended this webinar. There will be another webinar later this week on Friday, so we encourage you to spread the word of this webinar as well and invite anyone that you consider that could be interested in listening to this webinar to join us. And with this, I'd like to close this call and thank everyone again for their attendance. Thank you very much.